Gate has responded to IFF code. IFF read and accepted. Data transfer complete.
Are we recording?
I believe we're recording.
Hey, we're in. We're doing it.
Oh, man.
So, when was the last time we did one of these?
Over a month ago.
I feel like more than that.
Over a month ago. we'll keep it at that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Life.
Hey, welcome to the Memory Core, episode not one. at this point, could it be one?
We've been pretty busy. It's been pretty crazy.
It's been rough.
But yeah, we're here. We're glad to be talking. Got a couple things to discuss. Hopefully a relatively quick episode. Get some content out there. I don't know if you guys saw, I did a really quick talk on one of my favorite novellas, Hector. My hope was to use YouTube's short format, something that would get a lot of attention. But it turns out you have to record it with a phone to get the right aspect ratio so that then it will go up as a short. Otherwise, YouTube doesn't fucking care.
Yeah, I tried resizing it, but I'm not that good yet.
It wasn't meant to be. It wasn't meant to be.
I also did that Heavy Metal Pro video too.
You did.
I really wanted to cover that. So if you haven't seen that, go check it out. I like Rick's work.
Yeah. He did a lot of good stuff during that sort of period of Baltic history. Unfortunately, he's mentioned it. He's right. Like, he wouldn't be able to make much of a living off of it anymore because there's so many different free programs.
Well, from what I understand, he actually bought the right to do that.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, that's, especially when you're up against Microsoft, I mean, that's a financial hurdle to get through.
But yeah. So we've been doing some things. We've been really busy with work, you know, respectively. Our own things have been kind of hard. But we have been kind of chipping away at the hobby. And we both participated in the Trevor Project, which was a fundraiser set up by Carrie Schumann. Over at the Unicorn Company podcast to raise money for LGBTQ benefit for teenagers and kids. So I worked on Mad Dog. Well, it was supposed to be for the Cassie Galaxy for Novacat, Clan Novacat, which tends to do more like psychedelic things. And the goal was that it would be sort of an urban terrain so that everything kind of matched in a sense in terms of its terrain setting. And I did a dazzle camouflage Mad Dog with a lot of really bright, vibrant colors. Really kind of pushed my skills to the limit. And you get to finally use the oranges and yellows that I've been wanting to use in the Mac. About 6 months ago, I did a post on the Baltic Painting Customs. Like, look at this cool technique. You can use inks with your acrylics to really punch up the color, the intensity. Look how effective it is over black. People were like, why would you paint it over black? Like,
you know, we'll save that for later.
Yeah.
Because we got some useful tips.
Paying attention to anything I said. But yeah, I mean, it looked really good. And so hopefully, you know, we got some photos to share for you. And I know, you know, Dan contributed too.
Yeah.
A couple units.
I threw in an adder and a Grendel. I didn't do like an urban base. I put the Trevor Project symbol on it, on the base. But mine were done in... I remember, I think it was pansexual colors, ones I looked at, because I liked how they blended well together.
But it felt good. Like, it turns out, I shouldn't say we, because I mean, we is like a really collective whole, because there were, like, what, 10 different people who contributed, maybe more?
It grew.
We raised a lot of money, and even there was stuff.
Stackpole, right?
Yeah, Stackpole provided the signed copy of the Warrior Trilogy, and George Ladeau, Duncan Fisher himself from MechWarrior 4 Mercenaries. did some stuff, so that was really cool.
One of the best things that come out of that game.
Yeah, so it was great that something we were able to contribute and hopefully make a difference. So yeah, I got a couple of different views of the miniature that we'll get up there so you guys can see it in the video. And then most recently, I've been sitting on it for a couple of years. I remember I was kind of going through the Ironwood Metals site, and I don't know if it came up as a recommended, or people who have bought this have also bought that, but it was a Shadowrun Corporate Mage, and as soon as I saw it, I was like, I know exactly how I'm painting that, and I finally got around to it. I love the Venture Brothers. It's probably one of the best. It is the best show. It's not probably. It is the best show on television. And Pete White, the Pink Pilgrim, the albino compatriot of Billy the Quiz Boy, the hydrocephalic dwarf.
Clovis.
No, not Clovis. but yeah, so it was really cool to get that done and get that painted up and learn how to paint pink. And how to shade and highlight pink. Turns out your yellows do a lot of great highlights for a lot of different colors, whether you're doing like greens, reds, even purples, blues, and definitely pink. Yeah, that's pink. Got to pull out my Payne's gray ink to do the shade, so it was really cool. And I'm really happy. I'm happy with it. I'm not like, you always look at it and you're like, oh, I can do better next time. And you always do that, but I was really happy with it to get it done.
You're always your worst critic.
Yeah, yeah.
But it looks good.
Thanks, man.
Looks really good.
Yeah.
I didn't catch it at first. Yeah, I knew it. Like, I knew it because I haven't seen the Venture Brothers for so long. But I was like, why does that look so familiar to me? And then when you had a friend actually post that, I looked it up. I was like, mother of God.
Yeah. Yeah.
So genius. Genius.
So I'm glad that, I mean, it's been received well by people who know the Venture Brothers. People who have no idea what the fuck it is are like, okay, whatever, I don't care. Because I was gonna maybe use it as an NPC in a time of war, like that corporate contact,
the benefactor
fucks you over. But that gets into a whole other episode of the pros and cons of a time of war, and kind of what gets in the way, I think, of it being more successful.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, you've been doing a lot with Metallics.
Yeah, I did sort of a tribute to MechWarrior 2, probably my favorite BattleTech game.
Yeah.
Soundtrack, everything, just it's beautiful. But I based it off of the cover art from MechWarrior 2 and 31st Century Combat and MechWarrior 2 Ghostbusters Legacy. So I have a star of wolf mechs that have, like the green camo on the MechWarrior 2 box. All metallics, because I wanted to play with metallics. So it was a really big damn challenge.
Except for the checkerboard.
Cringe. The checkerboard was rough, but that was my first time doing it, and I think it turned out okay. Especially in the Ghost Bear guys. I'm still, kind of working on them, because Adam actually showed me how to highlight, and I'm cringing doing it, because it's a lot of work, but it brought them.
Yeah.
Made them shine a lot more.
Which is one of the things that, is worth talking about at some point. Another episode is just the simple fact that painting battle mechs is more difficult because the scale you're trying to represent is so large, and the shapes are, how you highlight the different shapes is more difficult than, say, an organic shape, or even a space marine, right? Like one of the most popular miniatures out there, like a 40K space marine. Learning how to do it is tough, but one of the first steps is understanding edge highlighting, because it provides that contrast between recesses and different panels, and it makes it readable. And I think it's the most important thing is how readable is this? Is it tabletop quality? Can I read it, from the tabletop? Or, can I hold it at arm's length and can I see the details? And if I can do that, I know I'm on the right track.
I could probably put a before and after up.
Yeah.
Because I did take them before I did the highlights, and it does exactly what you say. So, yeah. Because I know I sent you that picture. Mm-hmm. With my phone, but you can definitely see, I can put it arm's length away, away from me, and I could actually see, the face of the fire moth and, the different, even, the X panels on the Hellbringer.
Yeah.
And it pops.
Yeah, I've been painting, too. You can see I got primer on my
fingers. Oh, yeah.
but, yeah, I mean, learning how to do that is one of those things that it takes time, and then, how subtle do you do it? How much do you bump it up? And I think
it's a battle for me, finding out what I like.
People have a tendency to say, oh, well, I don't want to do that because I want it to look realistic. And I think the tough part is that, miniature painting, you're trying to mimic the realism of the shapes and how light plays on the object. And so, if anything, more realistic is going super high contrast, because you're trying to represent a 35-foot-tall war machine as represented by, an inch tall, inch and a half? And so I think that takes some time to get there. But it's once you get there, it's worth it.
I just wanted to do something new. I was sick of doing the usual flat colors you normally see, like gray and tan, and, you know, like, gray is just out there so much, or like a dark, even like black, like with a lot of the Wolfster games we've been getting. It was cool to see a lot of white with the Comm Guards, but even then, like, I wanted to try something different.
Yeah, you know? Well, playing with colors and learning how colors work is something that you never kind of stop learning, you know, unless you're Marco Frizzoni.
Yeah.
The Italian dude over on YouTube with Not Just Mecha, and the dude's he's just goddamn brilliant. And he painted one miniature, it was like a bust of a spaceman, and he used oils over acrylics, and I'm so angry because I'll never be that good. I'll never be that good.
We're going to be like playing Battletech in our 60s, like, I can finally accomplish this.
And then I lose my eyesight.
I'll finally paint it. Yeah, I know. Our version of like Twilight Zone.
I had the time now. What else? I mean, like, what are something that I just figured out? And this is just kind of by happenstance. I heard, or I just saw as an offhanded comment, someone mentioned about using a brass bristle brush on a pewter miniature. I was like, wait a minute, and it was sticking with me. And I had this miniature that I wanted to prep, and I had stripped it years ago because I've had it for like 15 years. I stripped it, and never got all the paint off of it. And just like 2 days ago, I was like, "Oh, I wonder, can I use this brass bristle brush to clean it off to get the rest of the paint off?" And I did, because the brass bristle brush will not hurt white metal, the tin antimony mix that a lot of people now use. Wouldn't be too keen to use it on lead because lead is so soft. And also the idea of abrading lead and possibly, lead particles getting in places. But I used the brass bristle brush on the pewter miniature and I was really blown away because not only did it take the paint off safely and preserve all the details with no sweat, but it also, I don't know if you'd say polished or burnished the surface of the metal, but it definitely made it much more pleasing because it is one of those things with white metal. Is it does have a texture to it. It's a little bit on the rougher side. And that is a complaint about it over plastics. And it's a fair complaint. But using a brass bristle brush on the miniature really improved things. And we're going to have to see if we can do like a side-by-side comparison, like a close-up of the miniature. This was just, this is a Reaper Wizard. And
you could do a short.
I could do a short. But I was really blown away. It's like, is this something that, just lost time? Is this something that goes back to the days when people were using like tin soldiers and doing wargaming before we are where we are now? Was it lost because we were using pewter on our end until like the early 90s and then everything went over to the white metal? And then before that, before you knew it, we were in plastics in the 2000s. Mm-hmm. Using the brass bristle brush, I was like, whoa, this makes a huge difference. And I made Dan do it just before we started recording. Yeah.
Yeah. I noticed a huge difference.
Yeah. And so it's one of those things like we'll have to do a better comparison. Because obviously doing it like this, you're not going to see it. You're not going to appreciate it. And me holding it up to the camera, I mean, it's not going to focus. So.
Yeah. If you do your short, I think it would really, really show it. Because I mean, I was doing it a little bit, but then you grabbed it, like the way you did it and everything. It's much easier to see it, than talk about it.
And so far, it doesn't seem to damage the ability of the metal to hold paint. Or to hold primer. You're here in fireworks to record this on the 4th of July. I mean, I was like, wow, okay, have we been doing this wrong? Because metal gets a bad rap, and yes, it has negatives to it, but I feel like those negatives tend to be really drastically overstated. And kind of gets me to, like, I'm really excited for the Ralph Martha Legacy Thunderbolt Mountain Miniatures Kickstarter that they're doing. It's like their fourth wave. And Tom Meyer is doing a whole pile of new sculpts in his 30mm fantasy range of elves, dwarves, goblins / orcs, and some like Byzantine-inspired humans, as well as a couple different monsters. And they just look incredible. And they're like old school, in the sense that it has that design language of 70s and 80s Sword and Sorcery. But at the same time, it is sort of modern in its approach and its aesthetics. And it's still metal. It's, you know, green stuff or green epoxy to sculpt it. And Tom was actually the first one to sculpt with green epoxy, which is a whole other episode. The dude's been doing it for 50 years, and he's only gotten better. And it's really cool what's going to be in that Kickstarter. And so I'm really excited about Metal Minis, because they're still doing some cool stuff with them. They're definitely not... The limitations are not... Because people complain about the old Battletech Minis, which is a whole other thing, but like the limitation of the material is not a problem for new miniatures versus old. Like, that's just not the issue.
Well, when they were trying to put out a new... They were discussing the Clan box set for like over 10 years, and I remember, I think it was Herb said that, that they weren't going to include the Fire Moth in it, and I was one of the guys among like others who were like, why would you not do that?
Yeah.
You know, if you're putting all the Omnimechs in it, like the originals.
Yeah.
And he said that the problem was because of how, like, the material they were using, the plastic, they couldn't get the arms right because the arms were too small.
Yeah.
So they, instead of actually figuring out a way to do it or, like, use a plastic that's maybe a little more expensive, they just decided to drop it.
Yeah, I mean, that gets into a whole other thing, too, is, I mean, it would have been cool to see a Clan box set with, like, the 16 original Omnimechs in it.
Oh, yeah.
But, on the one hand, back in the day, you know, the late 2000s, early 2010s, the materials and methods that either Catalyst had access to or willing to pay for, it was totally different. And a lot of the miniatures that we saw with the 5th edition / 25th anniversary box set, you know, a lot of those were based off of masters that were modified from the Iron Wind minis. And so you kind of get this continual degradation in quality, right? And so you see people post like the side-by-side, you know, what came before, what came after, or like the old sculpts, the new sculpts. It's like, you're taking like a tape recorder and you're recording something off the radio and then copying it like two or three cassette tapes down. It's not going to be the same.
It was like the first two iterations of those box sets. You had the introductory box with the catapult on it, and then you had the anniversary box. But then it was the one like maybe like a couple of years after that where they fixed that.
Yeah.
And those were the ones that ended up being those plastic Alpha Strike boxes.
Yeah.
And the metal beginner ones that you could still buy off of Iron Wind.
Yeah. But it's still a copy of a copy of a copy, which is a good mention also, by the way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like I think probably the worst, I mean, bar none, the worst was the 3rd edition box set miniatures. It is really, really awful, like slippery, slimy vinyl plastic that just... It just wouldn't hold paint. You know, is plastic supposed to be really good at holding paint?
It wasn't this.
It wasn't that. yeah, like the styrene versus PVC. And now that we've got CO cast, you know, on the horizon, breaking into sort of mainstream stuff, I'm hoping Iron Wind will pick up CO cast at some point. It would be a major investment.
We've been talking about that a lot lately.
And I know there's a lot of stuff that the guys at Iron Wind are dealing with. I don't know if you guys saw the GoFundMe for Melissa the office wench. And I've had to talk with Melissa a couple times through email for stuff. She's great. She's fantastic.
She is. She's real responsive. Yeah. And she didn't even deal
on some stuff before. Yeah. And she's got, I don't know if it's terminal or what, but it's like stage 4 cancer. I think it's in her brain. And, you know, miniatures is not a industry that you go into to make a whole boatload of money. You know, you go to because it makes you happy and you make enough. But there's a GoFundMe put out to raise money. It's actually done really, really well.
And, yeah, it makes me proud to be a BattleTech fan.
You know, for like our like five people that watch this regularly, like they're not going to make a difference. But I mean, definitely shout out to people like Tex, who sent over a lot of people there to donate, and a lot of people. I even saw like Michael Stackpole donated, and a lot of people who have been impacted by BattleTech and Shadowrun and.
Some shops to put it up. I think Harry's Games and Miniatures is actually
the one who started it, Derek, started, right?
Yeah, yeah. Derek. Yeah.
And, you know, it's great to see that people who have worked with the guys over at IWM have donated. And people who have had good experiences. Because, you know, in a more sane society, we'd probably have universal health care. But it's okay, yeah. You know? We have GoFundMes.
It's the 4th of July, dude.
Yeah. But I'm glad to see that this GoFundMes has done really well. And because Melissa and Mike deserve it. Yeah, mm-hmm. They definitely deserve it. But yeah, I mean, you know, moving away from sort of maybe less sad topics, we did have a game.
Yes, we did.
And it was a Sysco game, and it was IntroTech Inner Sphere versus Two Clan.
Yep, I was the clan boy.
So let's see, we wrote down. I took the Stinger, which was the MVP of the game, by the way.
Yeah.
the 8Q Awesome, the Hunchback, the standard Hunchback with the AC-20, I think it was the 4G, I think. And then
yep,
4G. The Phoenix Hawk D. And then, Dan, you took the...
I took the, what was it, Mad Dog A, a variant that I usually don't play a lot. That was the one with all of the SRMs, the ERPBC.
Yeah. And the LB-5X?
Yes,
yeah,
the LB-5X.
Yeah.
And then I took the Storm Pro C. Mm. The Storm Pro C is actually one of my favorites. I did choose that one because I wanted to at least have something I was a little comfortable with.
Yeah.
Because it was our first time doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you know, the one we had before that was the one you don't like to talk about.
Oh, yeah, it was the vehicles versus the plants, and it just...
That was a bad night.
I think I missed 11 shots in a row.
It was
on an Antos.
It was brutal.
It was bad. It was two vehicles. I hit with one and then missed with the other weapon system on the vehicle. I think it was a Manticore.
If you...
And then the Antos then shot, and Antos missed with everything.
If you are one of our Battletech listeners that used to participate on the official forums, it was some Jade Hellbringer level crap. Yeah, it was that bad.
It was quite frustrating.
But this game, I did have a first because you ran the...
So we were playing the Alpine Hills, right? Was that the one we were playing?
Yeah, Alpine Hills.
So yeah, there was like this spot that sort of seems to funnel everyone into, like, right in the middle of the map set. And it's sort of like the one clear zone.
Yeah.
And I had maneuvered my Hunchback and, like, the first round of combat. And the Autocannon 20 hit. And that was the only time I got to fire that Autocannon 20.
It was. Because my Storm Pro with the... not unbalanced large pulse laser was able to get a headshot, and then I rolled the actual limb blown off. So I rolled two 12s in a row. In my entire time playing Battletech, I've never ever done that. So my reaction was a little over the top when it happened, but you definitely were not feeling it.
Yeah,
that was... It wasn't a bad move what you did.
Oh, right,
you
right.
The cover, like, yeah, just everything was in your favor.
And, you know, there were a couple of... It ended up, even though I won with this IntroTech Lance, and although, yes, I mean, you were technically outnumbered, there were a couple of rolls that had they gone one way or the other, mm-hmm. it could have gone either way. And it wasn't like, oh, well, you got a headshot, right? But it's like, well, you know, if you hadn't missed here or if you hadn't missed there, not that it needed to be a headshot, but it could have made a big difference.
Like, I made the mistake. I really wanted to take out that awesome. That was my mission for the rest of the game.
And I had the awesome in a really good position, yeah. A really good position, because he had partial cover and he was up high and he could see, you know, all around him. And it made a big difference in terms of
he was
just pouring down fire.
Doing his job, being a turret. Something to kind of like how do they describe the Hunchback? Like the bubble of doom,
to keep
people away. And the awesome kind of did that.
Yeah, yeah. What it did allow me to do was to get the Stinger behind the Mad Dog. And like I said, like if one roll had gone another way, the one time you decided to fire the Stinger, you'd use your ERPBC and you missed.
Yeah,
and it was sort of tough. Like, do you turn your Mad Dog around to face the Stinger, thereby exposing the Mad Dog to the awesome, or do you kind of deal with the Stinger? And in the end,
put up with it.
The Stinger did manage to knock out the Mad Dog's gyro after several rounds, just plinking away at the back end. And a lot of it was machine gun hits. The medium laser would miss, the machine gun would hit. And then eventually, I think the Stinger take off the leg off the Storm Crow with a kick or something.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, the Stinger was the MVP. That awesome took a being.
Yeah, he's definitely a zombie machine. But it was, no, it was cool, because I mean, it was those things like, yeah, obviously had there been a different map, maybe it would have been a different outcome, had some roles gone differently. I don't feel that it was unbalanced, because those clan weapons are so powerful, but it definitely was a matter of luck and decision-making by us that made a factor too. You know, the awesome grabbed an awesome spot on that map, and you couldn't dislodge him. I just saw the reality of it.
I abused the pulse lasers.
Yeah, you did.
I did. You know, I had Stormcrow C, man. But again, like the tank game, like every time, I don't know what it is with me and clusters, but it's like I'll open a hole and they will just go all around it every freaking time.
Well, and the awesome has a lot of heat sinks to suck up crits.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I knew that when I was trying to take it out.
But I definitely found myself riding that heat curve very aggressively. Like, I'm just gonna keep firing because I know I have a good shot. Let's just deal with it. I'll deal with the consequences later.
I was doing.
I'll deal with the consequences later.
I was dancing on the heat scale with that mad dog too.
Yeah.
It was worth it. I think I alpha striked one time because I knew he was definitely going down.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
But it was good. I mean, it's one of those things. Like, yeah, you could still win with an intro tech lance. The clan, it's just how you use it.
People tend to forget that when they talk about battle value, that BattleTech is also, I would say it's fair because it is a game of tactics, but there is also luck with the dice.
Yeah.
But what people kind of lose is like when you get those debates between using D12 and 2D6, mm-hmm. is that you can kind of control your luck in a way because you know how a bell curve works between the two.
Yeah.
So you know to stay around like 6, 7, and 8.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, it is frustrating because I felt like when we bring up the battle value thing, people would like lose their minds. Like, oh, it's not really balanced.
Yeah,
well, like, I can't
for player skill.
Yeah, for player skill, right? Like,
or luck.
You could take a fighting game and do a mirror match, but obviously if one person's better than the other, that person's going to win, right? Like, you have different character knowledge. Like, that's just the way it goes. Mm-hmm. Just because you're having the same character doesn't mean it's going to be a fair fight. And there's ways you can counter that. You can compensate for that. But, yeah. And had some roles gone differently, I mean, the Mad Dog A and the Stormcrow C, although they're lower BV compared to some of the Prime variants, they're no slouches. They're still clan weapons. And the Mad Dog A is just a cluster monster.
Yeah, that thing's a beast. It is a real beast. Normally, I take the... Was it Mad Dog B with the two large lasers, and like it's basically another one of those kitchen sink variants.
Yeah.
But that's why I like the original Omni Mix, man. They just didn't care.
Yeah.
They threw whatever they could on those things.
Yeah, and I'm actually going to hop onto Iron Wind in a little bit and try and hunt down the different pieces to make a Hellbringer B because it's I want to paint one up to match the CCG card. That painted by Lobenstein.
That's what I want to do with that Cyclops we got recently too.
So I got to figure that out. I got to figure that out because actually Ironwind is having another sale. It's like a 20% off until the 8th.
Oh yeah, they are. I got a message.
If you order $100, you get 20% off, which is pretty good. It's a pretty damn good deal. But yeah, and probably get some paints as well from Reaper. That's what I tend to use. But yeah, guys, I hope you guys have a good 4th of July. It's been a weird year if you live in America. So, but hey, it's been a while. So we're glad to be back. We're glad to see you. We're glad to talk and ramble. And
we have some more stuff coming out.
Yeah. Hope you guys like oil washes. If you don't know about oil washes, we're looking forward to teach you about oil washes. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Happy 4th, guys.
Happy 4th.
Happy-ish
4th? Happy-ish. I mean, I don't. I don't want to be in crippling debt.
Bye, guys.
Bye.